Chapter 8. But it is not in a woman's nature to keep such secrets, and the captain, who left her for days and days, did not reflect that she would seek for confidence elsewhere. For want of a female companion, she was compelled to bestow her sympathies upon Mr. Brock, who, as the Count's corporal, was much in his lodgings, and who did manage to survive the disappointment which he had experienced by Mrs. Catherine's refusal of him. About 2 months after the infant's birth, the captain, who was annoyed by its squalling, put it abroad to nurse, and dismissed its attendant. Mrs. Catherine now resumed her household duties, and was, as before, at once mistress and servant of the establishment. As such, as he had the keys of the beer, and was pretty sure of the attentions of the corporal, who became, as we have said, in the Count's absence, his lady's chief friend and companion. After the manner of ladies, she very speedily confided to him all her domestic secrets, the causes of her former discontent, the Count's ill treatment of her, the wicked names he called her, the prices that all her gowns had cost her, how he beat her, how much money he won and lost at play, how as he had once pawned a coat for him, how he had 4 new ones, laced, and paid for, what was the best way of cleaning and keeping gold lace, of making cherry brandy, pickling salmon, etc., etc. Her confidences upon all these subjects used to follow each other in rapid succession, and Mr. Brock became, ere long, quite as well acquainted with the captain's history for the last year as the Count himself. For he was careless, and forgot things women never do. They chronicle all the lover's small actions, his words, his headaches, the dresses he has worn, the things he has liked for dinner on certain days, all which circumstances commonly are expunged from the male brain immediately after they have occurred, but remain fixed with the female. To Brock, then, and to Brock only, for she knew no other soul, Mrs. Cat breathed, in strictest confidence, the history of the Count's winnings, and his way of disposing of them, how he kept his money screwed down in an iron chest in their room, and a very lucky fellow did Brock consider his officer for having such a large sum. He and Cat looked at the chest. It was small, but mighty strong, sure enough, and would defy picklocks and thieves. Well, if any man deserved money, the captain did. Hockey might buy me a few yards of that lace I love so, interrupted Cat. If any man deserved money, he did, for he spent it like a prince, and his age, and was always in his pocket. It must now be stated that Monsieur de Galgenstein had, during Cat's seclusion, cast his eyes upon a young lady of good fortune, who frequented the assembly at Birmingham, and who was not a little smitten by his title and person. The new coats, laced, and paid for, as Cat said, had been purchased, most probably, by His Excellency for the purpose of dazzling the heiress, and he and the coats had succeeded so far as to win from the young woman an actual profession of love, and a promise of marriage provided Pa would consent. This was obtained, for Pa was a tradesman, and I suppose every one of my readers has remarked how great an effect a title has on the lower classes. Yes, thank heaven! There is about a freeborn Briton a cringing baseness, and lickspittle law of rank, which does not exist under any tyranny in Europe, and is only to be found here and in America. All these negotiations had been going on quite unknown to Cat, and, as the captain had determined, before 2 months were out, to fling that young woman on the pave, he was kind to her in the meanwhile. People always are when they are swindling you, or meditating an injury against you. The poor girl had much too high an opinion of her own charms to suspect that the Count could be unfaithful to them, and had no notion of the plot that was formed against her. But Mr. Brock had. For he had seen many times a gilt coach with a pair of fat white horses ambling in the neighborhood of the town, and the captain on his black steed caracoling majestically by its side, and he had remarked a fat, pudgy, pale-haired woman treading heavily down the stairs of the assembly, leaning on the captain's arm. Always Mr. Brocutine, not without reflection. Indeed, the count one day, in great good humor, had slapped him on the shoulder, and told him that he was about speedily to purchase a regiment, when, by his great gods, Mr. Brock should have a pair of colors. Perhaps this promise occasioned his silence to Mrs. Catherine hitherto. Perhaps he never would have peached at all, and perhaps, therefore, this history would never have been written, but for a small circumstance which occurred at this period. What can you want with that drunken old corporal always about your quarters? Said Mr. Trippett to the Count one day, as they sat over their wine, in the midst of a merry company, at the captain's rooms. What? Said he. L.D. Brock? The old thief has been more useful to me than many a better man. He is as brave in a row as a lion, as cunning in intrigue as a fox. He can nose a dun at an inconceivable distance, and scent out a pretty woman, be she behind ever so many stone walls. If a gentleman wants a good rascal now, I can recommend him. I am going to reform, you know, and must turn him out of my service. And pretty Mrs. Cat? Oh, curse pretty Mrs. Cat, she may go to. And the brat? Why, you have parishes, and what not, here in England. Egad! If a gentleman were called upon to keep all his children, there would be no living. No, stab my vitals. Croesus couldn't stand it. No, indeed, said Mr. Trippett. You are right, and when a gentleman marries, he is bound in honor to give up such low connections as are useful when he is a bachelor. Of course, and give them up I will when the sweet Mrs. Dripping is mine. As for the girl, you can have her, Tom Trippett, if you take a fancy to her, and as for the corporal, he may be handed over to my successor in cuts. For I will have a regiment to myself, that's pause. And to take with me such a swindling, pimping, thieving, brandy-faced rascal as this Brock will never do. Egad! He's a disgrace to the service. As it is, I've often a mind to have the superannuated vagabond drummed out of the corps. Although this resume of Mr. Brock's character and accomplishments was very just, it came perhaps with an ill grace from Count Gustavus Adolphus Maximilian, who had profited by all his qualities, and who certainly would never have given his opinion of them had he known that the door of his dining parlor was open, and that the gallant corporal, who was in the passage, could hear every syllable that fell from the lips of his commanding officer. We shall not say, after the fashion of the story books, that Mr. Brock listened with a flashing eye and a distended nostril, that his chest heaved tumultuously, and that his hand fell down mechanically to his side, where it played with the brass handle of his sword. Mr. Keene would have gone through most of these bodily exercises, had he been acting the part of a villain enraged and disappointed like Corporal Brock, but that gentleman walked away without any gestures of any kind, and as gently as possible. He'll turn me out of the regiment, will he? Says he, quite piano, and then added, con molta expression, I'll do for him. And it is to be remarked how generally, in cases of this nature, gentlemen stick to their word. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.